Coming up on the Critical Mass Podcast, a brief word about Horse Clans Volume 1, How to Train Your Dragon, and then the guys and I talk about elements of setting.
Primary Reaction Chamber.
Critical parameters on Orb.
Time.
Initial reaction at T-minus 30.
Heal slug in place.
Stand by for injection.
Capsule breach now.
Reaction commencing.
Containment field hold to 3.14 degrees of time. Inertial dampers crossing to capacity.
Can we hold it?
What's happening?
Critical mass.
Hold on! Mind spike!
I'm Winston Crutchfield, your host for the Critical Mass Podcast. Thanks for sticking around. First and foremost, we're still raising money and awareness for Compassion International through Compassion 365 over at compassion365.com. You can check out me and a bunch of other guys in the Christian New Media Group. Give it a listen and go sponsor a child or lend your support some other way. One of the ways you can lend your support is by contributing your stories to a benefit book project that we're doing here at Critical Press Media. And you'll be hearing a little bit more about that in just a second. But first, The Coming of the Clans, Horse Clans, Volume 1, by Robert Adams. My buddies have been urging me for years to read this series, said that I would really enjoy it. And finally, I picked up the first 5 of the 18 volumes in the series and started reading. I just finished Volume 1 very recently, and I gotta say, they're right. The Coming of the Clans was first published in 75. It was reissued in 1982. And then very recently it was reissued with through a small press. And I'll have some links to those volumes in the show notes. But briefly, the Horse Clans books are set in a post-apocalyptic America following a catastrophic devastation by, you know, who knows what, whatever catastrophically devastates entire civilizations. The story revolves around Milo Moray, one of the Undying. He is an immortal who has walked the earth since before the Great War. A long time back, he organized the clans of North America, the survivors of North America, into nomadic, horse-riding barbarian clans, took off to quest for a city composed entirely of people like himself, and then finally returned to the clans in order to lead them across the country to the shining city of L.A. And although L.A. was part of California, and Milo knows this, his intention is to lead them across country from the Washington area to the southern coast of Florida. And the first book revolves around this journey. I gotta say, it's very interesting. Elements of the setting, and that's something that we're gonna be talking about a little later, but elements of the setting include not only your post-apocalyptic barbarian wasteland, which is very cool, and Adams doesn't dwell a lot on the elements of the setting. He doesn't dwell a lot on description at all. Adams is big not on characterization or dialogue or any of the things that many authors spend time on. Adams specializes in action, and the Horse Clans books are very, very violent. They are filled with aside from just the violent action, the descriptions of war and the battles that they are in. There's plenty of other adventure type action to go with that. And again, Adams he passed on in 1990, a historian and a military historian, and his descriptions of tactics and his descriptions of arms and armor and his descriptions of the trappings of metalwork and leatherwork and stuff that comprise the clans really reflects that. It's very, very good to read that. But the books include, in addition to Milo and his horse clans, the books include telepathic cats, telepathic horses, and a few other telepathic creatures that live in harmony or in opposition to the men of the nation. The factions of North America are all representative of groups on which Adams makes sharp and pointed social commentary, despite stating at the very beginning of the very first novel that it is not his intention to do so, that he is simply telling a story for the sake of telling a story. And while that may be the case in The Coming of the Clans, the other novels really kind of go out of their way to make pointed social commentary. The Horse Clans books are also not for the squeamish. They are very, very, very violent, graphically depicting not only scenes of torture and abuse, but also of rape and other atrocities. So not really for the squeamish or the sensitive to that. On the other hand, the language of the books is not necessarily as brutal as even what we've come to expect on daytime television, and many of the much of the cursing and much of the phrasing is unique to the setting of the Horse Clans, and Adams makes very good use of that. So as novels, I look forward to reading the other books in the series, the ones I've got and the ones I'm going to have to borrow from friends. Most of these books are not in print. If you're interested, you're going to have to look to find them. I'll see if I can't provide some links on Amazon to make that a little easier. Check out the show notes and the Amazon store a little later if you're interested in that. As elements of setting, I think the Horse Clans is a fantastic setting in which to set a role-playing game. And in fact, there was a GURPS Horse Clans in the 90s that took Adam's world and detailed it for the purposes of gaming, and they did a really good job of that. Again, that's a book that's very, very difficult to find, but will reward the search. So, Horse Clans, I'm enjoying it. Very violent and full of many things that will offend those people who find things like this offensive, including the descriptions of atrocities, as well as Adam's mostly hostile take on practically every social dynamic and organized institution, both social and religious institution, that is not, well, that's not him. So, anyway, some interesting books, quite a lot of stuff in there, especially if you're going to be talking about social dynamics and social commentary. Plus, you know, I really, really want a telepathic prairie cat. That would be cool. So anyway, stick around for a brief comment on How to Train Your Dragon. But first up, here's this.
I tell you the truth. Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me.
Critical Press Media's first benefit project for 2010 will be part of Compassion 365, the year-long campaign by the Christian New Media Group to raise awareness and funds for Compassion International. We are looking for original fiction by new and upcoming authors with a passion for emotional storytelling, thought-provoking and well-reasoned essays where critical reasoning is brought to bear on the topic, and riveting news articles documenting the impact of suffering on humanity and the efforts of individuals and relief organizations. The passage in Matthew defines six states of being wherein an act of compassion, performed as ministry to another, is actually service rendered to the Lord. Hunger, thirst, alienation, vulnerability, sickness, and imprisonment. A manuscript ideally suited to the project will treat one of these conditions as a central element or theme and demonstrate the effect of these conditions both on the afflicted and their deliverer. More information on this project may be found in the submission information section at criticalpressmedia.com. More information about Compassion 365 may be found at compassion365.com. So we saw How to Train Your Dragon with the kids in 3D today, and it was quite the cute, quite the entertaining film. I'm not certain how much the 3D effect really did for the film. I think it would have been just fine in regular 2D, and plus I wouldn't have had to wear those glasses, which I really dislike. Now, I have not read the How to Train Your Dragon books, but I'm fairly certain that the movie really only draws inspiration from the books and doesn't follow that plot very closely. It's fairly standard kid fare. You know, everything we know about the dragons is wrong, and mean humans for reflexively killing these poor, dumb, defenseless, fire-breathing animals. So, if you can get past the Greenpeace message, this was quite an entertaining movie. It wasn't laugh-out-loud funny, but it really scratched the itch for adventure, and certainly it's of a higher quality than many of the things to which we have been treated, including Alvin and the Chipmunks, and Shrek, and God help us, Avatar, all of which I consider to be animated films. Of greater interest to me is the number of previews that aired in front of it, and of these I was treated to a preview for the I'm gonna have to look it up now, a movie about talking owls, a preview for The Last Airbender, and a couple of others that I'm really looking forward to. So while How to Train Your Dragon was cute, and my kids really enjoyed it, and we had a good family time, overall I don't really think it's worth the extra money for the 3D version, and I would be, while I'm probably going to be coerced into purchasing a DVD of the film when it finally comes out, it's really not going to be for the benefit of the adults in the house. I can think of adventure films that I would rather watch. Average film, nothing really spectacular about it. But on the other hand, it wasn't horrible either. So hey, there you go. The film wasn't horrible. So the guys and I talked for a little bit about elements of setting in regards to role-playing games. And we're going to close out with that, but first I'm going to leave you with this.
Is this your idea of Christian music?
Jesus is mine. Oh, what a foretaste of glory divine.
Yeah, me neither. Let's try a little head noise.
Invest your money, run rat race. You've got two blinds in your face. Less or more you love the taste.
So tune in to JT's Indie Christian Music Podcast at www.jtindie.com.
Okay, the topic at hand is RPG setting. And this has been on my mind primarily because I'm putting together the Atomic Earth Savage World setting. I want to make sure I've got the right stuff in there.
Flavor.
But also because comparing different books which are on the surface very, very similar but don't have quite the same setting flavor. And I'm talking about Necessary Evil, Savage Worlds, versus Scrapers from Rifts. And first of all, the rules are the most obvious difference. And if I hadn't said it, Curtis is joining me on the podcast today because he's here and he couldn't get to the door fast enough. So Kurt, do the rules affect the the setting in this way. I mean, we've got essentially the same setting. You have a world that has been invaded by aliens, and your characters are part of a superpowered resistance force. The most obvious difference between the two books is the rule set. Does that influence? I mean, Necessary Evil is by far the superior book. Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
All right.
Sumbita's superhero's powers are cool, but his main thing is he wants you to roll them up, marrying them. It's like what I was listening to the Fear the Boot podcast. They were talking about this specifically, and the whole point is, well, Superman didn't choose his powers. That's the whole concept of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
yeah.
But yeah, it's just the rules make the flavor in the end. I mean,
you really think it's a matter of
look how many games we've passed up playing due to the rules that have a good setting.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah, there's some we don't play because of it. Like
okay,
GDW's Twilight, the Merc series. We never played them.
Twilight 2000, those were cool.
Yeah, but we never got past it because of the rules, because no one wanted to be an aged, old Cotter, because you could die character creation. Which is supposed to be the cool part, but the rules were just, you know, we weren't adult enough, I think, to play that then, but still. You know, like Cthulhu, here's rules, the horror rules.
The horror rules on Cthulhu, yeah.
It sets the flavor for that whole scenario. You scared.
You know, it really does. The Cthulhu rules go a long, long way towards influencing the setting.
Yeah.
Although, on the other hand, I'll have to say that Middle-Earth and Rollmaster come to mind.
Yes, but that was just cool. That was.
Cinnabar?
Cinnabar is okay, but if you start looking at it more and more, you can see the holes in it, the gaps, but it's a game where you just play and go. And it's, you know, well, you want to play God-level stuff, see how far you can go, and then you fill in the gaps.
Yeah, but you were talking about bad rule systems.
Yeah, it's okay, but right when we played it at the time.
I don't know. I guess what's bothering me at this point is, why is Necessary Evil so much better than Scrapers?
Color pictures in the books.
Okay, artwork's got a lot to do with it,
man. And and look at it. Scrapers has been around for 20? I mean,
a long game of time.
We've had those books forever.
Yeah.
We've never really played the setting. It's okay.
Never really played it.
There's, you know, you look at
98.
Yeah. You look at the same. You look at that book. It's the same old Palladium book. Necessary Evil, color pictures, quick and easy character creation.
Yeah.
And you're in. That's the seller.
Yeah, that's...
And it just, you know, it's an alien invasion, but still, you read all the character backgrounds.
I guess the one thing I was looking through them last night, I noticed that Scrapers, like almost every other Palladium book, is all characters and equipment.
Yeah, and very little setting.
I mean, OCCs and equipment and stuff for your characters, which is cool. I don't know how much of this book is devoted to,
I'd say 10 pages if we're lucky.
Yeah, to the story.
May 20.
We got... Okay, the book starts on page 9, and by page 11...
Setting done.
The setting is done, and you are into the RCCs and how to make the characters and stuff.
But you can think along the same lines as Savage Worlds. I got enough for flavor, tell you the story, get it done. You know, plot points, you know. It's just, I think the book just looks cooler in the end.
Yeah, the book looks cooler, artwork is different, but then again, you've got, you know, we're further down the road. Trade Dress has come a long way since 98.
Yeah, but still, somebody doesn't put out anything that nice anyway, you know.
But I notice about Savage Worlds, about Necessary Evil, that the story is well over half the book.
Mm-hmm. Because the rules have already been established in Savage Worlds.
Well, with Scrapers, the rules, you're supposed to use the basic, the core rules from Rift.
Yeah, and look how much he devoted to the story.
He didn't spend hardly anything on there.
And that's his typical thing with all his books. The most we've seen is in Rifts.
Yeah.
And that's his baby. You know, he birthed that.
But again, the core Rift book doesn't have a whole lot of story in it.
No.
It's got more setting material, but it's all very generic.
It tells you the makeup of the world. That's it. You got to get the settings books for that.
I mean, they share a couple of very cool things. Both settings, you have defined good guys, you have defined bad guys. And, I don't know, but Necessary Evil gives you that nine-story structure and just a metric truckload of plot points and, you know, extra story material, you know, so those story seems to keep you playing.
Yeah.
Which is cool. What, when you think of other books that do a good job, let's talk about Robotech versus Star Wars for the setting. And we have spent many, many hours playing in both of those settings.
Yeah. Those are the longest campaigns we've run.
Yeah, yeah. The Star Wars games, when they first came out from West End, you know, just a ton of movie material and background material and all kinds of stuff.
You want, just so you can play it.
Yeah, just so you can play it.
Hit me in.
Now, compare that to the Robotech stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You recently bought all of the Robotech cartoons.
Oh yeah.
Why did you, would you say that again?
I needed some anime fix and they were on sale.
No, that's not what you told me at the time. You wanted to know what the story was.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I was pissed off about the game books. Because I was like, I don't want to really write this. And it's not in the books.
It's not in the books.
They give you timelines at best, and some info on what's going down. But nothing about the overall story. So I was like, okay, if I can get them cheap, I'll get them at, you know, a store. And I went to Coconuts, found them. I was like, I can, what? All right. I bought them all.
And that's not uncommon. Palladium does that. I mean, their books are primarily stats and...
Because the story's already established. You don't have to do much work to put it in his
Ninja Turtles books were the same way. But those were freaking awesome books.
Yeah. Yeah,
my turtles. So those are good settings, but those are have strong background material.
They've already been set.
Yeah. Strong story material behind it.
But,
What about Holy Original?
How have we played the totally original?
I don't know. See,
that's the thing.
The D&D stuff has got a real strong setting behind it.
Yeah.
It draws upon real strong archetypes. And again, when you look at the core D&D books, they're just like Palladium. It's all...
stat.
It's all stats.
Data and rules. You get a setting book to set what you want.
Top Secret SI.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the super spy stuff. We played the heck out of that.
Yeah.
And I was looking at those books again. It's all stats. There's no setting material there. And so I don't know. And is it this strong primary archetype that we depend upon to establish a setting that is good, or is it supplemental material coming in from outside to establish a really good setting? Or where is this coming from? I mean, it's really, really tough. Rifts is the one that just blows just blows the Venn diagram all out of whack because it's all stat. I mean, the story in there, the setting material is very, very minimal.
Mm-hmm.
But holy smokes, how many hours have we devoted to Rifts and the other Palladium offshoots?
That's a majority when we start doing anything else. I mean, if it's that or GURPS. And GURPS another thing, all stat. You get the
this is all stat.
You get the setting, the books, and it gives you enough to do it.
Yeah,
but that's the whole idea of it, and that was the cool part. That's what sold me on it because it just felt right.
Yeah,
the system fit with doing anything you wanted, and all those glorious books.
Yeah. Well, let's think about some of our favorite settings that have not made a successful jump to RPGs. Probably the one that comes immediately to mind for me is Serenity.
Yeah.
Firefly and Serenity. Very cool series, but you just can't recreate that in... you just can't recreate that in an RPG setting.
No.
Why is it so cool to play Star Wars, and just not the same when you're playing a Firefly campaign.
Okay. Star Wars, I mean, it's the soap it's the space opera. Anything goes. There's not a dead level of seriousness really in it. I mean, it's not, you know, it's got the oppressive empire, but you don't feel it all the time. You only feel it when you see the stormtroopers and their ships and stuff when they come, and then it's turned into a fight scene. Serenity, you always feel it because they're always, you know, downtrodden, the way the ships look, nothing's really clean, it's all, you know, old west style.
Yeah.
Tough and gritty.
That's a characterization of the Star Wars as well. I mean, everything in Star Wars is worn and used and...
Yeah, but it doesn't look that bad. I mean, no, it's just the way the movies look. I mean, if you ignore the first three, the one, you know, not New Hope, but the ones to complete the series, 1, 2, and 3, those are too shiny, too clean, you know, age of prosperity, the golden age.
Yeah,
it all looks, well, if you look at it, it's all the ships are nice and clean.
Yeah.
The Empire's, and then we got the ones we grew up on.
Yeah.
They're all dirty, Empire's oppressing everyone because doesn't want anyone to have it. I mean, you just feel it, but it just doesn't seem that dark or gritty as Serenity. I think
that's it? You think it's just the level of realism?
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, every time you watch Serenity or Firefly, you just see it, because the way the people's are costumes, I mean, it all sells that it's, you know, not a fun thing. The music, it's all melodrama, you know.
It is really melodrama.
I mean, it just sets the tone that it's, you know, you're repressed. And if you know the storyline, you're already in the mood when you're playing it. It doesn't feel, you know, you got to watch out for the... whatever, Empire and Serenity.
Yeah.
But in, you know, Star Wars, it's like, there's some Empire, so just kill them, brothers, and go on. Because they don't find you as easily, but in Serenity or something, they always found you. They always had someone on your tail. Empire, you always had a chance to lose them, or, you know, you didn't care about a fleet coming at you. You'd take them on. Because it just felt that way.
Well, I don't know. You take that same grim, gritty, realistic kind of thing, and you put it in... I don't know, maybe that is just it. Maybe Serenity is just too grounded. There's no adventure to be had.
There's adventure, but it's, you gotta be in the mindset to play that way. Because look at our normal campaigns, we go amok, maybe, you know, let's say we got a ship, we got all that stuff. Okay. What do we usually do? We will take the jobs. He watches out for the Empire. We take them on, and we go. The problem is, I think we lose on that, so ultimately, because they actually think, and they got the power that works.
Yeah.
You know, there is no, all right, we got the Jedi, he can help by doing this. All right, telekinetic kill. No, not in this one. It's, okay, they got the bigger guns, and we can't outrun them. They got a radio.
Yeah.
It's the common sense portion of it. Where, you know, they actually saw it in the series, nothing could run away. They always had, you know, but they had ways to trick them so they get away, you know, but still, the Empire, whatever, was still looking for them.
Maybe that's why we had so much fun with Aberrant and never really made the jump to Trinity.
True. Trinity, restrictions, oppressive.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, no free one, because I made several characters, read the books, liked them to a point, but I was like, damn, it's oppressive and hard.
It's harsh.
You gotta have the visas to get across lines.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, oh, God. It's the whole point. They set the setting right enough to where you have to watch your step.
Yeah.
And we don't watch our step.
Yeah.
So the campaign we need to get away. But Greg, if he's run, he'd bend it to where we'd have a chance. We'd start losing what the game's setting is.
Yeah, and it would become less theirs and more ours.
And then...
Something I have noticed... Oh, good, great. Something I have noticed while running, thinking about this, is that the settings that have made good books and good movies and stuff like that really don't tend to translate to the good games. Star Wars is an obvious exception.
It's a mega arsenium. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's what sells Star Wars. But think of some of the other books that, you know, this is really cool. We need to do something like this.
Battlestar
Galactica.
Isn't that
one? It just doesn't...
It feels one shot. Yeah. But it all does. Yeah. Because it just feels like you're going to start here. It's going to end here.
Yeah.
Like, it's certain. It's going to end here, or you at the end of a hangman's noose.
Starship Troopers.
Bugs, that's it.
It's a one... Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe that's it.
It's a niche.
Hammer Slammers.
Oh, Merc Companies.
That would be... I mean, it sounds like it would be so much fun to play.
But you're playing Mercs, and look at the role-playing thing.
But, yeah, there's no...
It's all action.
You're doing the same thing...
Day in,
all
day
the
out.
Time.
How do you... Because remember, I always like to play a Merc Company, but I know it won't be done in our group, or it can't be done because we get bored too easy. We tried it a couple of times.
Yeah. None of our Merc campaigns turn out well, do they?
No, because they die too quickly, because not everybody's in the military like me and Drew.
Yeah.
And then I want to shoot Drew still, because he wants to go off on the deep end too much. And I want to be, you know... So...
Greg, we are trying to figure out what makes a good RPG setting.
Variety. You guys were saying that anyway, but that's the spice of life, and it makes it work.
Variety.
All the ones that... they're all the big ones are all variety settings. Every single
except
one.
For Robotech. We tore that one
out. Yeah, but Robotech, it's a niche market, but it's a large niche market.
Mm.
And to be honest, you know, how many times have we played it that long?
And how much Robotech did you stick to
in the
the canon of Robotech?
Up to when we took that ship.
Yeah.
And then Ryan did things with the pit and messed with the engines, and that was
I mean, and it really started getting fun, but
But it's still a thing. It's the same old thing. Fight the engines, you know. So it basically comes down to
it's a
shoot 'em up.
Market, but... You know, like you said, we played it once and it enjoyed it. And we've used parts of it in other things.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean
the ships. I can still say I could create a better Battlestar Galactica with it and then the Cortex system.
Hmm?
It's just a variety of stuff. I mean, I got the Cortex system. It's cool.
See, I think there's a sharp difference between the old Battlestar and the new Battlestar. Mm-hmm. With the new one, you know, like you said, you're always so focused on the paranoia and who's a traitor and who's not.
And surviving. So all that depends
on you.
It's a grind.
Yeah.
It's an emotional grind.
And with
grind.
The old one, they were rampaging through the galaxy.
Looking, the survival thing was minor. It was
the Cylons were there, but...
That was it. Supplies were an episode once in a while, but they took it way harder in the new Battlestar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was more room for adventure.
There was other planets with people on them.
Yeah.
Aliens.
That's true.
Stuff. I mean, that was a thing.
By doing that, I agree. That made the old one better.
The new one is just tougher and grittier, but you could take...
You could take the idea.
You can take this, like in the role-playing game I got, the Cortex. It says, well, how you want to do it? You want to be on the Battlestar? If not, well, maybe you're another ship or another Battlestar that did make it, and you go on your own road.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can do it your way, because it doesn't matter at that point. You're going to... You're making your own adventure line.
So, variety. Got to have a variety of things to do. I mean, if you stick to the same thing,
Kurt's
it's going
right.
to get boring.
Star Wars, it's a variety. It is a megaverse.
Yeah.
Because every planet and area is different.
30,000 races.
See, Venus copyrighted that phrase.
Kiss my some people.
He comes, suck my unit.
What else? I mean, there's got to be more to it than just variety. Because we were comparing... Scrapers to necessary.
Okay, then it's got to be the player's devotion to that setting. You got to be devoted to play that setting. You got to agree. I mean, you get burned out or bored easily.
Yeah.
If you're in variety, you're going to be going down the same hall, like a dungeon crawl.
That's why paranoia doesn't go very far.
Yeah, paranoia is fun every once in a while.
It's all
Cthulhu. It's technically a niche thing. Admittedly, it's fun because. It's survived all this time.
But it's not
virtually
stuff that we build
unchanged.
These long-running campaigns
but you
around.
You build a long-running campaign because your guys are going to...
Yeah, or you build it like when I'm ring around. You build it, okay, then you got to fill out the history on your character sheet. Okay, your next characters are related to that.
That's cool.
And you keep it stringing. That's how they
do
the wrong ones.
Yeah.
But you got to accept the grind.
Yeah.
Because that's the only part. The grind.
Okay, so what makes Scrapers such a bad setting that... We bought the books. I don't think we've ever even read it all the way through.
I never did.
And Necessary Evil, so freaking cool that we can't wait to to get
into it.
Some of it
is setting. I mean, or not setting. Some of it is the system, too. Really, I mean.
Yeah.
You know, a setting like that in this setting, I mean, the powers are cool. Damn. I've been playing with powers all week. I talked to Ryan yesterday because I did actually make sure that I could, you know, find all the loopholes, and he can do that without even knowing a system. So there you go. He's already found three. So,
Boy.
There's the games lawyer now.
So yeah.
But, you know, when it's Savage World, mm-hmm. and it's got new and interesting material in it.
That's
while
true.
Scrapers, when you apply it to Symbeta systems, mm-hmm. you know, he's already got all that stuff somewhere else better.
Yeah. Maybe.
Oh, maybe that's it.
That's it. You know, you go and look
maybe
at it.
That's part of it.
That is mainly...
That's low-grade material.
I know what it was to make where riffs, where everybody could have superheroes and riffs. That's all. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was riffs where you ripped in, but this is a setting in his Megaverse of riffs, you know, the...
Yeah, but it's not in DC.
No,
that doesn't even matter.
No, because the problem is he swung up and down on that so dang much, you'd have mm-hmm. to ignore it. Because there's several books where he give you MDC and SDC. Mm-hmm. So if you want to do it in Rift, you just got up a mega damage mm-hmm. now, you know, which is simple enough. But it's just another setting with an alien invasion on Supers in a way. I mean, mm-hmm. it is just a setting he had to do.
Okay, so variety is going to be king. More than anything else, you think?
Yes.
Right.
I mean, that's what has kept Rifts alive, I think.
Remember the Rifts Merc campaign I was trying to run you through? It started dying quick because we were doing the same old thing.
Yeah.
Tried to flavor it up, but it was just the same old thing.
Yeah.
So
if variety is king, what about, D&D is another example where they're not pumping out setting material for D&D. What they're pumping out is character classes and opponents. Monster
one
manuals.
Book for settings.
Monster manuals.
And they
smokes.
Even a book like that for setting.
Is do the variety of the monsters...
Settings, that's where the settings are just a backdrop for people beating up monsters.
Yeah, that's all it is.
That's
like the guys
is.
In Fear of the Boots.
Okay.
That's D&D's core. Loot and destroy.
Kick in the door, loot the room.
Yeah. Admit it, sometimes you're saving X, Y, Z, whatever. It doesn't matter what
right.
you're saving.
Right.
The goal is, go find that critter, kill it, get the chicken back.
Yes, that's your goal. I mean, in its case, its variety rotates around those points.
Oh, look, this is a cool monster. Let's go try and find it and kill it.
Yeah.
You know, so throw it in a dungeon, get some stuff going there, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, or you do it above ground. It's the same thing.
That's the core.
But you can jump around. I mean, the settings they establish nice and color, and the books that go with the games, you know, they're cool. That helps establish
yeah,
those settings.
That's true. That's true.
They're
a lot of those setting books are very cool. The Ravenloft, the Greyhawk, the Ruins of Greyhawk. Mm-hmm. And
Ravenloft we haven't played much, but it'd be cool.
Yeah.
It's the oppressive horror, but you got a chance.
Just now. It's because you're not.
So...
Things are as well.
I guess the obvious question is, once we get done with the half book worth of story that's in Necessary Evil, is it done?
Hell no. We take it where we want then.
So when Necessary Evil is done, when you work your way through all the main adventure here in the book, I mean, there is no Necessary Evil sequel.
No.
There's no part two.
Nothing prevents you from continuing on.
Yeah, well, then it goes back to the old thing. Good guys get up, rise up, and then the bad guys go back to their old ways, or do some turn. I mean, that's where you can take it on before longer.
You can
or
take it.
There's a space out there now. We know there's aliens.
That's
hit
true.
It. Get us a ship. We're going.
That's true. I guess there's nothing preventing you from, after you run this, take it back
to a regular
four-color campaign.
I think the cool part would be to get a ship and go into space with them.
That would be cool.
There's alien races out there, and you just be planet hopping, you know. You know,
and they do mention that the Visori are at war in other sectors, so,
mm-hmm.
you know, free the galaxy!
Earth rises up and starts sending ships out.
That's it, we've had enough! Freaks! Freedom! Oh, Skyrapers, it's just a setting, you go as far as you want, and there's no end, but you're going to get bored.
There's no specific story in that. Does that really, really hurt the book? Do you think that's what set it apart?
You got to think and decide what you're going to do with it and how far, and then, okay, do I let them solve the problem, then it becomes another superhero setting in the end?
I mean, but you've got your basic open-end setting. You've got the variety right there. How come it doesn't work for Scrapers, and it works so well for Necessary Evil.
Okay. It's the same. It's like what you said with the stat. The system. It's all stats in the end for Palladium. Hmm.
Yeah. Well, story helps.
With Savage Worlds, there's not that much stats, so the story has to be more meat. But it's not where you bog down with doing. Oh, great! I go up a level. Add. It's,
yeah.
You know, it's not
leveling is slow.
Yeah, leveling slow. So you stick with the character more. So if the story ain't good, the game dies. But it's quick and easy. I mean, come on, how much do you have to do more with the Necessary Evil? Not much.
A lot.
You can jump rifts around, but it's becoming the same old thing. All right, we jump to a rift. Yeah. All right, we pick up some wizards, we do this, get a dragon, we go around. We're going to find something to fight.
Yeah.
That's all standard for rifts. Rifts has one story.
We role play, we run around with her for a while. What are we stopping? The Armageddon, the apocalypse, you know, all that crap.
Yeah.
We've done it for too long, and it's getting old.
All right, so to kind of wrap this up, what a good setting book that's devoid of the core rules, you know, a setting book for Rifts or for Savage Worlds or for something like that, what does it have to have?
Flavor and the ability to keep going in other directions you want.
Okay.
Yeah, variety.
A good amount of variety, a good amount of different things to do.
No story.
Firmly established flavor of the setting.
But nothing that deadlocks you into one type of going, like, you know, Merc, you gotta go this way. You know, can we do something else?
People only like being aimed in one direction for so long.
So rather than a particular story like Orpheus, where it's going, this is, you're going to do this, and this is going to happen, and then it's over.
Yeah.
More like the Necessary Evil thing, where this is a world, this is what's going on, this is what could happen. This is what you can do, and this is how things should progress. But it doesn't, I mean, when it finally reaches that climactic point, it doesn't shut things down.
No, you're done, you go back to your hidden lair, wait for the cops, try and rescue Doom Blast. No, you do something else. You're heroes of the world. What's else out there? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some of their campaigns line them up to become legendary, like the Evernights. You should be a legendary critter by the time you get to the end of it. The Flood.
Mm-hmm.
That's a plot point campaign for Deadlands. It's a nice book. It gets you to legendary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but then it's after that, what you do.
Yeah.
But it's still good.
All right, well, that's the next big project is the Atomic Earth Savage Worlds supplement. So we'll see if I can meet all of your criteria.
You better.
Or else.
Email at mindspike@criticalpressmedia.com.
This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license.